You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. The conversation of OTT, over-the-top broadcasting style of doing things, is going to be a big deal, largely because if you look at some of the trends, Emmy Awards, for instance, the winners of broadcasting networks are actually not there. The winners are mostly from OTT players, from Netflix, from Hulu, and from Apple TV. So that is where we're heading on to right now. In Malaysia, we've got Astro Go, we've got a few others as well, and of course, Astro's partnering with a lot of other partners. One of them is, of course, iQIYI. Joining us for this particular show is Dinesh Ratnam, the iQIYI boss of Malaysia, of Singapore, Brunei, as well as Indonesia. Dinesh, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks, Ibrahim. Thanks so much for having me.
That's the idea, right? Because it's an inevitable train where it's heading. OTT is dominating the market, and we want to know how the Malaysian landscape is shaping up. Maybe you can share with us on your business, at least in this country and perhaps in this region as well.
Yeah, sure. So maybe let me start by saying that as OTT is growing, I think OTT has been in the headlines everywhere, like you said. So let me kind of like split it into two parts. So I think there's pre-COVID and, you know, during COVID and post-COVID, right? So pre-COVID, like the growth of OTT, you know, fundamentally it just comes down to really two things, right? One is the fundamental human need to be entertained, and that entertainment historically has come in the form of, you know, linear TV and pay TV. And two, there's the increasing smartphone penetration and growing digital economy that's changing consumer consumption habits has also fueled OTT growth. So if you think about over the last 5 to 10 years, more and more things are shifting over to the internet. Traditional businesses, traditional ways of doing things have shifted online. E-commerce, great example. You used to need to go to a store to buy stuff. Now you just go online to Shopee or Lazada and, you know, buy whatever you want. So if you think about all these businesses shifting over to the internet, that human need to be entertained has kind of shifted as well. So you see over the last few years, like really more and more people are wanting to consume content on their smartphone through the internet, through an app. So that's really fueled a lot of that shifting growth towards OTT consumption. And then obviously COVID hit last year. And what happened is a real acceleration of those two things. You know, during MCO, when people are stuck at home, that need to be entertained because you're just stuck at home all day, you can't go out, you're looking for more and more forms of entertainment. And so that desire to be entertained grew even more. And then secondly, that desire to watch stuff on your phone, that desire to consume more things through the internet was accelerated as well. So what we saw was that really over the last, you know, iQIYI itself launched in 2019, but we only started to put feet on the ground last year in June. So I joined in June last year as the first hire to build a team over here in Malaysia. We saw tremendous growth in the streaming service, really driven by those two things. And, you know, some of the numbers have been pretty staggering. So, you know, between August and now, iQIYI has actually grown about 15 times on a user growth basis. And we're also the most downloaded streaming app in Malaysia as well. Really driven by, you know, those fundamental macro things that I talked about. People want to be entertained. People want to consume it on demand through the internet, on an app. And three, obviously, because of the iQIYI value proposition in itself, which I can share more over the course of this.
Let's go into that. Perhaps you can elaborate more on that.
Yeah. So it's really, our growth is really fueled by three things, right? So one is, we want to be the home of, so one step back. So iQIYI in China, biggest streaming service, you know, more than 600 million monthly active users. Amazing collection of Chinese content. Internationally, our positioning is not just to be the home of great, amazing Chinese content, but really Asian content as a whole. And what we see in Malaysia specifically is the desire for users to consume as many different kinds of Asian content as possible. So when I say Asian content, I mean Chinese, Korean, as we know, super popular. Japanese anime content has a big following in Malaysia, and of course, local content as well. So there are millions of people on a day-to-day basis that want to consume amazing Asian content. So what we strive to be is the home of high-quality Asian content, where we really have breadth and depth of all of those different kinds of Asian content categories that I just talked about. And if we can do that, it'll really attract users on board. because they want to watch that content. Secondly, it's not just about having that amazing content. User experience is super important. I think increasingly us customers, I mean, we're all consumers of content now, and we all are used to using different apps on our phone. And I think users are increasingly, they're just generally fussier, they're more demanding, they want more flexibility on how they consume certain content. So what that leads to is, what we have is a flexible pricing model. So users can choose to watch, so we operate a freemium model where users can choose to watch our content for free with ads, but if you want a better viewing experience, you can choose to pay and be a paid subscriber. So we provide full flexibility to the user to say, hey, if I don't want to pay, I get a better viewing experience. If I don't want to pay, I can still watch all of that great content as well. And you know, even within users that choose to pay, providing as many flexible payment options is also really important. And the last thing is really that viewing experience. Increasingly, users want to watch amazing content, but they also really want to watch it, uninterrupted. They want to watch it with full subtitles available. They want to watch it with the best experience possible. So you know, we really pride ourselves on having, you know, the fastest loading speeds amongst all of the streaming apps. You know, from the moment you click play to when the video actually loads, it's less than 2 seconds. So that's a big KPI for us. We also ensure we always have full subtitles in all the different languages in Malaysia. Malaysia is a really interesting country. As you know, we're multiracial. So we have people using English subtitles, Malay subtitles, Chinese subtitles. You don't underestimate the need to have availability of all these subtitles for all of our shows, always, anytime someone wants to watch that content. And we also do things where we've partnered with companies like Dolby, where we incorporate that Dolby technology into the content that is streamed on our platform. So you can watch great content with Dolby quality sound, for example, and full HD and even 4K as well. So really it's a combination of those three things. It's having that breadth and depth of high quality Asian content. It's providing as much flexibility to the users as well in terms of whether they want to pay or not pay for that content. And then three, it's delivering a superior user viewing experience. And of course, the fourth one is something that is driving OTT as a whole. It's just users are increasingly want to consume content on demand, whenever they want to, wherever they want to, on different devices. So that obviously is not something that's unique to IGE, but something that's driving OTT growth as a whole.
You know, when you said that you were brought in last year to get this off the ground, I can't help but notice that this business was built in Malaysia during the MCO, during the pandemic, perhaps even at the height of it, post Sabah election. Do you feel that it was a good thing to start off an OTT business during a pandemic, or it was just a crazy idea to begin with and it turned out kind of okay, many months down the road?
That's a really good question. I think honestly, nobody wants to start building a business during a pandemic.
Nobody wants a pandemic. That's the beauty of it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody wants a pandemic in the first place. I mean, nobody even saw this coming, right? Just kind of hit us out of nowhere and we just kind of had to live with it. So obviously, like, the challenges of starting a business, hiring people, the funny thing is I haven't even met my boss in China before. Like, everything was done virtually and remotely. So, building that rapport, that connectivity with HQ in China and hiring people on the ground and trying to do all of that virtually, remotely. I think the team itself, that we've got a small team in Malaysia, we only met, I can count the number of days that we've actually physically met.
Yeah.
Because we've all been working from home. So I think in a dream scenario, we would have had a bigger launch. Let's just say that if it were not a pandemic situation. But I think, the direction we took was that, there's no certainty on how long this pandemic situation was going to go on for, and that shouldn't delay plans to launch a business. So we launched anyway. And of course, I think there's some positives that came out of it, but there are also some challenges as well. So I think the fact that, people were at home looking for quality content to be entertained obviously helped. But then, some of the challenges were, just building a team remotely is tricky. Obviously, getting access to local content as well is also a little bit trickier because, as some of the SOPs during MCO didn't allow for production shooting to take place. So that obviously impacts like the local content supply as well, which kind of impacted everybody in the country anyway. So to summarize, yeah, there were some positives I think that helped, but there were also some challenges as well. But I think we're all happy that it worked out pretty good for us in the end, because we managed to grow to become one of the largest streaming services in the country now.
So while we're not out of the woods yet, we are heading to better days. 90% adult fully vaccinated number is going to arrive very soon. They're now starting to vaccinate teenagers. Do you feel that consumer behavior, particularly towards your product, is going to change slightly? You know, people are getting back into the offices. I am back in the office, for instance. So do you feel that this might not be so good for your business, or am I reading this wrong?
You bring up a really, really interesting point, and I think that's fair. I think there's a lot of pent-up energy for people to just be outside again. Obviously, you got to stay safe and all that. But I think people do want to be outdoors more now that you have the chance to do it. But I think the way we look at it is more on a long-term basis as opposed to a short-term basis. I think on a long-term basis, as I mentioned before, you know, there was a trend and a shift towards OTT even before the pandemic. Obviously, during the pandemic, I think all streaming services did see an uptick in growth. And I think once users get used to the fact that, hey, like, you got amazing content on available on demand, with a strong viewing experience, I don't think they're going to go back to old consumption habits. I think the acceleration towards OTT will only continue. In the short term, of course, you know, when people are out and about again, it's hard to say whether that's going to really impact our metrics in the short term. Maybe that's a slight dip because people are spending more time outdoors than they did before. But I think the way we look at it is kind of, you know, over the long term, do we think that growth will only continue to accelerate? Yes.
How do you manage this kind of various teams across the countries, particularly when it comes to building content that is resonating well with the local market? I'm sure it's different for each single market. Even in Malaysia, you know, content is different from city to city. So how do you manage all these kind of different demands from the different from the various markets that you operate in?
And it's not easy, but I think it's I would say it's two things, right? One is, you know, when you have a team on the ground, so we have teams on the ground in Malaysia, we have team on the ground in Indonesia. So I think we really rely on two things. One is the teams on the ground's understanding of the local user content consumption behavior, right? And then two, it's so to elaborate on that, actually, I think we're all Malaysians. I think, you know, some of us have content preferences of our own. So, you know, staying close to the user on the ground, in terms of understanding, so the team on the ground has to understand the users that we're going after, our target audience, and really getting close to them, really understanding what kind of content they want to watch on a day-to-day basis. So that's kind of like an outside-in approach, really understanding the market and making sure that we're able to deliver what the market wants. Then the second approach is, I would say, like the inside-out approach, which is actually we already have millions of users on our platform already across all of these countries, and then studying the data, right, on what they watch, how they watch it, when they watch it, to be able to sort of match that outside-in and that inside-out perspective to really have that deep understanding of ultimately what do our consumers want to watch. And what's interesting is that there are some patterns that are similar across the markets. So things like Korean content, everybody loves Korean content, for example. So generally, we see, you know, if a Korean content is kind of trending in Malaysia, that Korean content tends to trend in Indonesia as well. There are some differences, of course, and the level of how much it trends is different, but, you know, there's some broad common threads. Chinese content, another one, there's an increasing consumption of Chinese content, actually in both Indonesia and Malaysia, again, to varying degrees, but we see that broad trend. But then, of course, there are specific trends as well. You know, for example, in Malaysia, certain kinds of genres, certain kinds of you know, actors are more popular versus some of the other countries. So again, it's back to really understanding the user segment. You know, we meet with our users, we do surveys, not meet physically yet, but we do surveys, we meet virtually to really understand from an outside-in perspective. And, you know, we look at the data every single day as well.
So the partnership with Astro, that's interesting because some of the equity analysts are heralding the growth of Astro, partnering with all the OTT players from HBO Go, Disney Plus Hotstar, TVB Anywhere Plus, and of course with iQIYI. Do you feel that this is a big win for you guys partnering with us, being in one big family?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Astro's been a great partner, and actually Astro is actually holds a special place in the whole iQIYI organization. So Astro is actually iQIYI's first ever international partner. And you know, we work with Astro on different fronts. We actually, there's actually an iQIYI linear channel on Astro. Obviously, like, you know, Astro users get you know, a discounted rate to the iQIYI app, and we also do some co-marketing as well. So I think Astro's really helped build the iQIYI brand in Malaysia and also fueled some of that tremendous growth we're seeing as well. Astro, of course, super heavyweight in the industry in Malaysia. So, you know, being able to partner with someone like an Astro has definitely helped our trajectory for sure.
All right. Of course, moving back to iQIYI, we want to understand a little bit more about the kind of items that will take place after the MCO in Malaysia, around the region. Countries are getting better. I'm not too sure about Indonesia though, because you know, vaccination rates there are still at a starting phase. Do you feel that the recovery rate of all these various countries is going to be different in terms of how you roll out businesses there? At the same time, we all know that the OTT business is gaining ground so fast. Everybody's just unplugging and moving to OTT right now. Do you feel that that kind of strange place where you have to move the market along, but at the same time, the markets themselves are not ready for full recovery? This brings about this very strange way of doing things. And of course, couple that with the local content problems. I'm sure it's the same elsewhere in Indonesia, in Singapore, in Brunei as well, just like it is in Malaysia. So there's a lot of dynamics, a lot of moving parts here. How do you proceed with your business in the next coming few months?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of, it's definitely challenging.
Yes.
So you bring up a really good point. So I think the way we look at it, there are, so if you broadly, I mean, there's so many things we do day to day, but if you look broadly, right, that in terms of how we want to grow the business, there's the content piece, there's the product piece, and then say there's kind of like marketing and partnerships, right, broadly. So on the content side of things, again, one of the things we see is that the demand for Korean content, Chinese content, anime content, of course, along with local content, is huge. So I think we're also fortunate that, you know, a lot of the great Chinese content, you know, like China's kind of already been in recovery mode for a while now. So, you know, in terms of supply of great Chinese content, we'll continue to see that. So that'll just continue. Korean content, you know, production supply is impacted a little bit, but it's kind of in a better place than, you know, say Malaysia from a production standpoint, because we're only just starting to be able to shoot again. So we got an endless supply of Korean content that's coming on board, and the same with anime as well. So I think from a content offering perspective, we know that the users in all of these countries want that content, and we know that we can provide that supply of content based on what we're seeing in countries outside of Southeast Asia. So Chinese, Korean, anime content, will continue to see great supply there. From a local content perspective, I think that requires a little bit more planning. Obviously, our local content offering is impacted in the countries because of local production supply issues. But again, we're looking at things long-term as well. So, you know, I think things are starting to pick up again. You got to vary how hard you want to go on the local content production side of things, depending on the market, depending on the recovery, the state of recovery and the phase you're in. But again, we're looking at it long-term. So, you know, we're putting things in place such that when things are ready to be accelerated again, you know, we've got everything in position to do that. So on the content side, I think, you know, it's all systems go. On the product side, again, like, again, that's kind of independent of where we are from a recovery, MCO recovery perspective. We continue to look at the data, continue to build new features that will enhance the viewing experience, enhance user engagement. So that continues as planned. I think where it's most impacted really is, you know, on the marketing side of things, right? Like, you know, one of the big things we wanted to do last year was a big, you know, a big brand launch kind of campaign. But obviously, you know, the fact that we were stuck in MCO, the fact that there was no certainty on what you can and you can't do, and you want to obviously want to be careful as well. So I think that's held back some of the bigger marketing launch ideas we had. It hasn't stopped our growth because we just pivoted to being more targeted and focused in terms of how we did our marketing. But you know, obviously, depending on what state of recovery we are in, either in Malaysia or even Indonesia or some of the other countries, I think the way we market our brand, the way we work with partners, what we can do physically on the ground is kind of the most impacted.
All right, let's focus on that. So the partners include, you know, I guess advertisers, but of course companies that want to build the brand together with you guys. We're in the same space, I suppose, Astro and ITE and all the other players that we mentioned just now. How do you feel you are approaching your brand partners, potential advertisers? Is it a strong proposition to come out strong right now? And I'm sure companies are thinking about spending whatever budget that they have this year, planning for whatever budget that they have next year. It's going to be a tough one for all of us, right?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. I think that the encouraging thing is that, you know, I think Q3 was a little bit slower for everyone, given all of the uncertainty, you know, coming out of that May period where we kind of re-entered this MCO state. Everybody was kind of in wait-and-see mode. I think what's encouraging is that we are really starting to see everyone really look ahead. Like, you know, all of the conversations, like just in the last few weeks when things are starting to open up again, like every single partner I'm speaking to, you know, every single advertiser that the team speaks to, like everyone is really thinking about looking ahead towards the recovery and how they can, you know, start to drive to be top of mind and in front of consumers again. So actually, you know, things are moving in the right direction. You know, like a few months ago, I think everybody was wait and see and just kind of like moving sideways. Now we're seeing people really looking to put money to work, looking to do bigger things. Obviously, a lot of that is still kind of more digital than it is physical. Just again, people are mindful that you need to follow SOPs and try to be safe. But I think we're seeing great activity. And in terms of, you know, how we want to work with partners is that I think we bring a strong value proposition of our own. You know, we've got great Asian content, we've got a great product. I think content's in demand. And you know, what we really try to do is find ways to work with different partners to achieve that win-win situation. I know it's a bit cliche to say that, but I think what we really try to do is
No. Dinesh, the cliche thing is the win-win-win strategy.
There you go. Yeah.
But sorry, go on.
Yeah. So I think it's really about sort of customizing how we work with different partners, because what we find is that as we speak to more partners, like, you know, different partners have different approaches to things and different partners want different things, right? What one partner wants actually might not be the same as what another partner wants. So what we try to do is be flexible in how we customize how we work with these different partners. So we're really maximizing the common objective. And, you know, happy to say, like, you know, Astro has been a great partner. You know, we launched with Maxis as well last year. And, you know, we've got multiple other partners as well that you're going to start to see being announced.
Final question to you is perhaps a bit tricky for you to answer, but the ocean is getting bloody every day. There's going to be a lot more OTT players coming. This impacts everyone, every single broadcaster that you can think of. How do you navigate this very problematic environment? The market isn't big for everyone, that's the thing, right? For a 30 million population, it's not big. And for Southeast Asia, 700 million, you know, it's not big. I mean, ITE has 600 million in China, yeah, fine. But, you know, growing it internationally, it's going to be a bit tough, right?
I totally agree with you. It's not been easy. I think competition is there. The space is a little bit crowded, but I think we're pretty confident in that. So in our strategy, where one, we're super user centric, where, you know, we study our users really well and we really get deep into what they actually want, what the masses actually want on a day-to-day basis. So I think, again, like our core strategy is to, one, focus on, you know, that breadth and depth of Asian content. And we see Asian content only continuing to grow in demand by the audiences in Malaysia and in Southeast Asia as well. There are many, many data points that we track. You know, one thing interesting that I do want to mention is, so Google does this year in review thing at the end of every year where they summarize the top 10 most searched keywords for different categories. For in Malaysia in 2020, for the entertainment category, the most searched titles were all Asian. So not a single Western title was in your top 10 most searched in Malaysia last year. And if you break that down further, 4 out of the 10 were Korean, 4 were Chinese, 1 was a local Malay title, and one is a Bollywood variety show. So if you look at it like broadly in Malaysia, that this is just one of the many data points that point towards Asian content really dominating what users want. And if iQIYI can provide each of those categories, if you look at that content, it's not like all 10 were Korean either. It's quite well balanced, right? And if iQIYI can provide as much depth in each of those content categories, I think we'll be a winner. And we're investing heavily in Korean tremendously on the local side as well. And anime is a big pillar for us. So I think as long as we focus on that, that's one core pillar. The other one is just a religious focus on the user experience. Like, how do we ensure that users enjoy the viewing experience on iQIYI has to be, you know, superior to other platforms. So that's something we religiously focus on. Little things like the subtitles thing I mentioned just now. All that. And the last one is really what we're thinking about is the world.
It's actually not little, because of a person like me, I would only watch movies with English subtitles. You know, I don't need it for anything else, but, you know, it's like a teletext of sorts. But yeah, it's not a thing. It's not a little thing, to be frank. I think it's a huge thing.
Exactly. And I think it's often overlooked. What's important to us is user perception. Like, we track things like App Store ratings, user feedback on the App Store, Play Store, and social media. So we are constantly listening to our users, understanding what they want, understanding what the problems are. And if there's a problem that they are having with our app, we immediately fix it. Like, we have really strict, call it like processes or KPIs or whatever, that's just focused on ensuring we're delivering the best user experience. Because at the end of the day, the users are king, right? Like if users are unhappy, they're just gonna, like you said, there's so many other platforms out there. There's so many ways to consume content. So you have to be super focused on the user. And related to that is actually the last point. You know, we're starting to build, we've been around for a while. You know, the whole team in Malaysia is obviously Malaysian. We understand the Malaysian user mindset. And what we're trying to do is customizing and further localizing product features within the app as well. So you'll see a bunch of, can't share too much yet, but what we're trying to do is introduce features that are going to be unique to OTTs and unique to iQIYI as an OTT, and also unique towards what our users in Malaysia want as well. So they're going to be interesting features to drive more user engagement, drive more user interaction within the app as well. Because if you think about, you know, and most content consumption today in terms of watching movies or dramas, it's very, it's just one way, right? So it's passive viewing, the content's on TV or the content's on your mobile phone and you're watching it and that's it. But then there are users that actually want a more interactive experience. So we're thinking about what product features we can add to drive a little bit more active viewership and drive a little bit more engagement and interaction. So many interesting examples in China, where they've introduced many different features that drive the interactivity. But then we also recognize that, you know, not every user wants it, but there are a lot of users that do. So obviously all of these features can simply be turned on and off by users who want to use them or not. So it's these three things.
Well, that was our conversation with Dinesh Ratnam, the country manager for Malaysia, Singapore, Brunei and Indonesia of iQIYI. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.